I want to tell you a story. A story that takes place in 1898 in the Tsavo region of Africa. A story about two man-eaters known as the man-eaters of Tsavo, or as I knew them, the ghost and the darkness.
A pair of maneless lions who hunted the workers of the Kenya-Uganda Railway. This all took place between March and December of 1898. These were probably two of the most cunning, ruthless, brutal hunters to have ever graced the plains of Africa.
The plains of Africa. Like, I'd say inherently more often than not, I err on the side that, you know, animals have no concept of good and evil, right? They don't have morality, except for dolphins. Dolphins are just evil, but
or dogs, and well, I'm not counting chihuahuas.
But these lions were evil.
Pure.
Like they this was not natural behavior. This wasn't life or death for them. This wasn't they were eating for sustenance. This was straight up
they were
killing. Like that was the whole point of what they were doing. Yeah. So
yeah.
I want to tell you this story, one, because history is violent. I think we need to remember that. But two, I want you to share in my nightmare. So, yeah, 1898, Tsavo region of Africa. Britain doing as Britain does. They were, you know, wanting to sun not to set on their empire. So they were having a bunch of, you know, Indian workers that they had, you know, boat in, and some African workers building a railway that was going to connect Africa, something that was thought, you know, it was a joke. It, you know, it wasn't possible. No one thought it was possible, at least. But they were going to connect Africa, right? And outside of all of the, you know, supply issues and manpower and everything else, they came upon a entirely new problem, which was two man-eaters, two maneless male lions, which, if you know anything about lions, males do not hunt together. And these were a stain upon that project for 9 months, killing hundreds of men. And the part that's scary is that they didn't act like normal lions. Like, their behavior was so, like, outside of the man-eater part, like, this was sport for them. There were accounts from, what was it, Lieutenant Colonel John Henry Patterson. He's the guy that ended up, you know, killing both the lions. He was actually dispatched from Britain to help oversee the project when he, you know, inherited this problem. But these lions would roar outside of the camps before going in to take someone away. Like, yeah, sometimes they would stalk and be stealthy, and obviously you wouldn't see or hear them because they're built for that. But sometimes they would announce their presence. They would roar and like psychological warfare on these dudes outside the camp before they snuck in, wherever security was weakest, wherever a rifle wasn't, to go in and literally just drag full-grown men away, never to be seen again, or to be seen, you know, a mile off, just tore to shreds.
Yeah. So these lions at the shoulder were 4 feet tall.
Think like about that. 11-inch at the shoulder, not the head, the shoulder.
The shoulder.
Like,
so when they wrote, like, when they raised their head up, the average African was probably looking those lions in the nose.
Yeah. It's, depending on the neck length, I mean, the, he'd be looking you in the eye, a freaking lion.
Terrifying. And
nose to tail, I think it was somewhere like 9 foot.
9 foot, weighing, 8 inches was the first one.
Weighing up to like 400 pounds. Like,
Jesus. Oh.
Well, I mean, there were stories like a lion would go into like drop through the ceiling, like the ceiling vent in a tent, jump in, grab a guy by the thigh, and just rip him out of the tent and just pull him away. Like, literally, so like heel marks, just elbow marks, literally fingernails left in the dirt, trying to hold on as it just tore away. Like, people would be holding on, 3-4 guys would be trying to keep him there, and they just pulled him away. And sometimes they didn't even bother like taking them away to eat them. They would be like 30 yards away, 50 yards away, and they would just listen to this dude get eaten alive. And, you know, there were some, you know, days and days or like a month where they wouldn't, you know, be attacked. But there were other reports of like other villages or like other nearby people being attacked during that time. Like, so from the reports, from Patterson's reports, and he only kept track of the Indians that they had, you know, brought to the work site. He didn't keep track of any of the Africans, but from what he kept track of his records, 135 people unaccounted for, which is hard to tell because, you know, some, you know, they were at will employees. So like some of them would leave or, you know, whatever without saying anything, but you have to think just, that's just the Indians that were there. 8,000 workers were at this site and they didn't eat every single one. So some of them, they would only eat a little bit. Some of them, they would just kill and leave. Like, just the insanity of it all. Not to mention, like I said, all the unconfirmed reports of the other villages. And you have to think the numbers that they're coming up with, hundreds of people. Like, absolutely crazy. They would, so when Patterson got there, you know, when it turned out like, okay, this is gonna be a problem, he started having them make Burmas, which are essentially just walls made out of like briar bush, like thorn bushes, to try to deter the lions. They'd have these huge bonfires to try to deter the lions. The lions would drag men over the bramble bushes. There was an account of them dragging a guy through the bramble bush. Just absolutely insane. You have to think, you know, most of these guys didn't have rifles, right? There are only a few of them that had rifles because, you know, that wasn't their job. Their job was to make a freaking railroad or to make a bridge for the railroad, right? And these massive freaking cats, dude. Like, imagine a lion looking you in the eye. Like, now imagine that, two of you, right? So 400 pounds running at 30 miles an hour, like, just dragging you for a mile before it's like, okay, this is a good spot to freaking eat you. But, oh, man.
Did you read what it actually took to kill these things?
So the first one, not that much. The second one?
Oh my God, the second one?
What?
Yeah. So, guys, you have the first one? Yeah. So the first one, Patterson shot it with a high caliber rifle in one of its hind legs, but it still escaped. And then he shot it during the day, and then it later returned at night and started stalking Patterson. Patterson was hunting it. Patterson ended up shooting it through the shoulder and into its heart with an even more powerful rifle. And he ended up finding it dead the next morning, not very far from the platform where he was hunting from.
Yeah, so literally so he didn't see it for most of the night. Like, it took until almost right up until he shot it for him to like get a good beat on it. But he said, like he wrote in the morning, there were just trails getting closer and closer and closer to his hide site. Yeah. So there was, so think about it, 9 months, right? Patterson's been trying to get these things for 9 months, every night almost. You hear someone screaming, getting killed. Like every single, like imagine that every single night, and you're trying to hunt this thing, and everywhere that you are, the thing isn't. But at one point, they made a trap, right? So they took two carts that they were loading supplies in. So he had one cart, and then he fashioned another one on top of it to make a coffin, essentially, right? With a little peephole. Him and another guy had rifles, beat on these goats that they had tied like 10 or 15 yards away. And they said that the sound inside, obviously everything was echoing, where it's like you heard a scratch or like a beetle, and it just amplified, and like they were getting pissy and everything. And until they saw a shadow, and it's like, oh, it's nothing. And it's like, you know, no, that wasn't there before. And ended up taking shots at it. He knew that he missed because he didn't, you know, in his report, he said that he didn't hear it hit flesh. But I don't know if he hit that time, but I do remember that that same time they were too scared to go out, obviously. But there were paw prints all the way up to the cart. And one of the goats was missing.
Nope. Nope.
Not a sound. Goat was gone.
Nope. Nope.
Like, and the second one, go ahead. Yeah, cause and I was going to say, I'm pretty sure the rifle he used was a 30-30, and he also had shotgun with slugs.
Jesus.
But
okay. So the second one,
this one's my favorite, cause just screw you. You know,
This second one was shot 9 times. The first time it shot was from the scaffolding that Patterson had built near where the goat had been killed by the lion during that fateful, I guess, flawed cart intervention. Two shots were from another rifle, which hit the lion 11 days later as it was stalking Patterson and trying to flee. So then they found it the next day. Patterson shot it 3 more times with the same rifle, crippling it, and then shot it 3 more times with another rifle, twice in the chest and once in the head. And that headshot was what killed it. And he claimed,
I'll go for it,
it died gnawing on a fallen tree branch, still trying to get to him.
Yeah.
That is insane.
So those shots broke a hind leg, broke a front leg. Who broken legs? Still hunting them. And then, yeah, gnawing on a tree branch trying to get to him.
These are not normal lions.
No. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, it was, and there have been so many, like, theories, because one of them had a tooth infection, which isn't, you know, atypical for lions, but, you know, people think that's why they turned to hunting people. They've done tests on the bones and, you know, like, seen, oh, well, such and such, you know, percentage of meat eaters and such and such of herbivores and everything. They're trying to dictate off of that, you know, what their diet was like and how many people they actually killed. But they didn't eat the entire person. You know what I mean? Like, this was for sport. They ate a little bit, but this wasn't like they're doing this to hunt. And they had plenty of herbivores in their system. They were perfectly capable of hunting larger game. But literally, I think he described it as like a rare moment of courage in the workers. One of them was getting dragged away, and they all came out, like all the workers in the vicinity came out and were like running at it with like stones and sticks and everything, and like that foiled its, you know, the hunt, and that dude ended up being able to, you know, able to live. But like, these things, you have to think of just the size of these things, and like, they would just sneak into tents or jump into tents and pull people away. Like, it's not normal behavior. Like, you have to think, like, these kind of animals, like, they stay away from people. Like, and this isn't like a small band of like a platoon, like 50 people. 8,000 people. And it didn't matter where. It didn't matter if it was on the outside of the camp, on the inside, in the med bay. Like, did not matter. And there were times. Yeah. And I mean, and these were wicked smart lions. Like, so I'm saying, like you said, it's not natural. They're not normal. Because at one point they had moved the med bay, and Patterson and another guy set up in the old med bay and spread out blood and like animal carcasses and everything inside the med bay, the old one, to try to lay in for a trap. That same night, they attacked the new med bay.
Oh my God.
Like, oh, dude. Yeah.
One thing to keep in mind too.
Hear or see, and yeah, just the undeniable force, and just rip you away. And you didn't know if it was it, you didn't know if it was you or not.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing to keep in mind too was these lions started, when they started attacking, they were only doing it one at a time. Only one of them would go into the camp. But eventually they started both going in, and each of them would grab a victim and drag it away. So that's how the death toll got so high so fast.
Yeah.
But for nine months.
From what's recorded. Because yeah, they went to other villages, like, and mm-hmm, you know, who's to say that the guys just left camp or disappeared? You know what I mean? We don't know. Like, that's the crazy part. They never found their den. Like, that's the craziest thing. And to think, so two lions, granted, man-eaters, huge lions, atypical, right? But completely put a halt for thousands of men.
Yeah.
Like, just terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. It took 8 men to carry off the first lion when they found it.
Yeah. And actually, their skins and their skulls are currently on display in Chicago at the Field Museum of Natural History.
Yeah. If
you guys want to go see them.
Crazy. So the pelts, they were not taken care of well. So
no.
They were dehydrated. They shrank. Like, it was, yeah. So they're so much smaller than they actually were in life. But the skulls, of course, they kept. And yeah.
Oh, dude, yeah, there's pictures of them. Like, look how friggin' big those are.
And that's with the shrunken skins.
No.
That's skulls.
No, like there's actual.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, after they kill them. Yeah, no, massive. Massive, yeah, creature.
They're freaking huge.
If the this one where was they have the up, head.
Yeah, it. Yeah. 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 Like held up by freaking.
Yeah. By sticks. Yeah. They have one where, yeah, it's laying down, obviously, because it's dead, but the head is held up by sticks. And the head just takes up the guy's torso, essentially. Like, it's just.
Look at the size of his front paws compared to Patterson's, yeah, head. They're as big as, yeah, his freaking head.
Yeah.
That is obscene. And if you guys, yeah, want to be absolutely terrified, go watch the Ghost in the Darkness starring Val Kilmer. It's, I watched this when I was young, and holy crap, it scared the ever loving piss out of me. I could, you know, not.
What got me super not bad? The Edge. That screwed me up for a long time.
The Edge. I wonder if I saw that.
You saw that. There's no way you didn't.
Probably did.
Yeah, look it up. Yeah, no, like you said, like, so literally the lion could probably fit his entire, like, if it opened it up, he could probably like dive into the freaking lion's mouth. Like,
yeah,
it is. The body doesn't make sense for this thing. It's stupid.
You know, I don't actually think I've seen this movie.
Really? Oh, my gosh, yeah, man.
It's, that it's was like basically a modern day take of The Revenant, right? the story of Revenant.
Old movie.
Oh, I know.
And completely different.
I know this movie's old, but it's the same kind of principle, you know, like
ish. So yeah,
three guys.
So the old rich dude, right, takes a couple of buddies out over. I don't remember where they are. I think they're in Alaska. They go on a flight, right? But plane crashes. When the plane crashes, they start getting hunted by a bear, by a man eater.
A Kodiak. Huge bear.
Them just trying to survive. Like that's the story. But terrifying. It's a freaking nightmare fuel. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kodiaks are so big.
They are. But we tell you the story. What? What do you do?
They can be 10 feet tall when standing on their back legs, 5 feet when on all fours, and are roughly 500 pounds heavier than the average grizzly bear.
Yeah.
1400 pounds. Holy crap.
Dude, look up the largest Kodiak bear. So there's a picture online somewhere. This dude got the world record Kodiak bear, killed it. Strung it up on the side of his garage, went to the roof.
Wow.
It's a big ol' nope for me.
Yeah, I mean, the largest one in captivity was in the Dakota Zoo in North Dakota. Weighed about 2,400 pounds.
Yep.
That is crazy.
Because screw you. That's why.
That's as big as a car.
We got off topic.
Yeah, sorry. It's back to the Sabo
Man. Talking about bears. So the reason why we tell this story, the man-eaters of Tsavo, the Tsavo lions, were two lions among thousands of men. They attacked where the defenses were weak. They attacked where they weren't expected.
They never fought the entire force head on. Like, they took one man at a time up until both of them were going in at the same time. Then they were taking two. But sometimes they roared just to announce that they were there. Psychological warfare. It's just insane. And most of the time, you wouldn't see or hear them before they attacked. Yeah, all of a sudden, you just heard somebody screaming.
I was going to say 400 pounds, like that 9 foot long lion, and you wouldn't hear or see a thing.
Yeah. So I know Patterson speculated about 135? Just
135, what he could confirm, like,
right,
with, like, in his writings, like in the logs that they had. But he estimated more.
Yeah. Like, modern day, people were kind of guessing at it. The so-called experts are now saying that, like, the combined death toll, between the two, probably about 72.
But that's based off of what they ate. And that's my main ick with that, is because you're assuming with that study that they ate the entire person, which they did not.
They didn't.
They didn't eat every single person. So, you know, and like I said, that's just from stuff that we can confirm, not from, you know, the other villages. Who knows? And this was just 9 months of this job, of this project. Who knows how long they've been doing this?
Right.
You know? But yeah, two lions brought the work of thousands to a halt for 9 months before they were eventually killed. We're using the story as an allegory. You should use the story as an allegory. Because today, we aren't just talking about the Lions of Tsavo, the Man-Eaters of Tsavo, the Ghosts in the Darkness. Today, we're talking about gorillas. And real quick, guys, let's take a little break to hear a word from our sponsors.
This podcast is sponsored by Blackbeard Firestarter. Blackbeard Firestarter has been our first choice in Firestarter since they introduced their Firestarter rope years ago.
Blackbeard offers their fire starters, their fire plugs, arc lighters, ferro rods, stormproof matches, everything you need to get a fire started.
Their products are made right here in the U.S., wind and waterproof, have an insane burn time. They're basically dummy proof.
And help you out, Blackbeard let us cherry pick from their store everything that we want, everything that we thought you needed to get a fire started, and we call it our Hard Time Strong Men Fire Kit. On top of that, they're also offering a 15% discount on anything in their store when you enter code STRONGMEN at checkout.
We can't recommend Blackbeard enough. They stand behind their products, and so do we.
Be sure to check them out at blackbeardfire.com and on Instagram at blackbeardfire. And as always, stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight. And now a word from our newest sponsor, Granite Rifle Group. Granite Rifle Group is a precision rifle company owned and operated by a USMC veteran. You've probably heard him on our show.
Granite offers turnkey rifle solutions built around your field use with plug-and-play upgrades available to tailor your rifle for your specific needs. GRG offers simple rifle kits or complete custom builds available to suit every need, from the weekend target shooter or hunter to the long-range precision rifleman.
Granite Rifle Group is all about putting high-quality precision rifles into the hands of Americans to extend the reach of the American rifleman. And when you use the code STRONGMEN at checkout, you'll get 6.9% off your order. Nice.
Nice. Check them out at graniterifelegroup.com or find them on Instagram at granite_rifle_group_LLC. And as always, stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight. Yes. Yeah. And these lines were the guerrilla warfare experts of their time. Like no other example that I can think of in the animal kingdom would suffice to be called guerrilla warfare than these two Gary mother effers.
I mean, they were called, so the locals called them demons.
Mm-hmm.
So what these lions were able to accomplish for so long, what they did, how they acted, that should be the kind of violence of action, the kind of, you know, decisive boldness, right? So you're talking about strength, speed, boldness, being everywhere and nowhere, being decisive, then being gone. This is what we've been talking about, what we've been pushing for, right?
Right.
I think it was episode 5. We introduced the idea of the guerrilla fighter, and we said that we would have more talk about that. And then we got into teaching and
yeah,
we taught for 2 years, and it's been, you know, we've gone pulled along on a bunch of different rabbit trails, and we've got lost in the, you know, lost in our curriculums, but we want to reaffirm with you and refocus your mindset of why we're doing all of this, because you are the gorilla. At least you should be. What we talk about with, you know, the militiamen, the Minutemen, preparedness, you know, being able and willing to do violence for yourself, your family, your community. That's what we're talking about. Being able to be mm-hmm. self-sufficient, to be autonomous, decentralized, an expert in your craft, in the fight, in choosing your fight. That's what we've been pushing for, and that is our focus. So take everything that we've done and look at it in that lens, because that's what we're trying to accomplish.
Like the managers of Sabo, we really need to become beasts among men. Like when it comes to the fight, when it comes to doing what needs to be done, you need to be strong. You got to be fast. You have to be bold. You have to be everywhere and nowhere at the same time. You have to strike decisively and then just be gone. And above all else, when it comes to taking action, you need to not care. You need to not care about who's on the other end, because you have a job to do. And that job is important. You need to do what needs to be done and get out of there. And don't let things stay on your consciousness.
Speed, surprise, violence of action. And we've
was hammered into our brain.
Well, and the thing is, you know, we have been adamant from the beginning. The reason why we're teaching this is to take care of people so that you can take care of people, right? You know, you need to take care of yourself, your family, your communities. Part of that is being able to, you know, do these tasks and do them well. Yeah. Now, our experience, you know, professionally, Inari, does not lend to this. You know, there are things that we've gleaned and things that we've, you know, been able to teach, but the mindset of having that supply line, the infinite amount of manpower, the, you know, 50, 100, 200, 500 people, you know, at your disposal is not a thing.
No.
That is not realistic. That is not what we're dealing with now. That's not what you are dealing with now. That's not what you should be preparing for. You know, why did we teach hunter-killer teams? Why are we teaching, you know, obviously these warrior tasks and drills, survival, fieldcraft, medical, all this stuff? Because you're going to have to wear a lot of hats. And you're not going to have those supply lines or the, you know, seemingly infinite amount of people. Something that you're going to have to do, you know, at a man-to-man level. You are not going to be setting up a support by fire element with a saw or a 240. Probably. Be really cool if you were. But that's not the fight that you're fighting. Think about Reaper 1-1, okay? Or Reaper Consultation. He's now on Instagram. He got, you know, zucked a few times. But
like Zuck, yeah.
You know, think about, I think it's, he called it 3-2-3s, where you have three teams of two, triangulated through, you know, whatever AO you're at, and you're taking disciplined good shots at intervals so that as someone's shooting, you're communicating, moving, and you can lock down a town that way, mm-hmm. a hillside that way, whatever you need to do with a minimal amount of effort. These are things that you need to be, you know, thinking of. The fight isn't like how we had in the army. We're not rolling, you know, squads and platoons deep. You have to be thinking small teams, and you have to think that you're going to take your decisive shot or shots, and then you are leaving. That's, you know, if you haven't read The War of the Flea, read The War of the Flea. Okay? Like, that is your fight. That is you ticking away at the beast for, like, the lines of Savo, months and months and months. And that's how you're going to get that lasting success.
One thing also to remember is our time in the army, we were limited by ROEs and the Geneva suggestions, I mean, conventions. As a civilian, you're not. You have no ROEs. You do not have to follow the Geneva suggestions at all. So what may be considered a war crime? Hey, man, you're a civilian. You do what needs to be done. Just going to say that.
Except for mixing ammonia and bleach. Don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that.
Don't mix ammonia and bleach.
Unless you're mixing it and then getting out of there. Just saying.
Just going to see how far we can push us.
Oh yeah, we're no, speedrunning getting canceled.
Hell yeah. No, but you know, I'm just thinking back to the last 2 years, right? And we've done a lot of good, but I feel like we could have done better in, you know, framing this, right?
Right.
Because we started off on the right foot, we started off in the right area, but then we got digging into the content and trying to, you know, make our 1% increases every episode, every week, every month, you know, etc. But you know, this is the end game. This is the whole point for the podcast, is training up this better class of man, right? Getting you guys the best that we can possibly get you so that you can do the same thing with your, you know, with your communities. But the way that you need to operate in order to survive is this model. Because you are not rolling in with an infinite budget and a lot of people. You just aren't. So you have to be smarter. You have to be smarter. But rolling in, what do you want to touch on?
So I mean, we've got a lot of areas that we've been trying to teach. Mainly, especially with guerrilla warfare, mainly we're focused on the skills of your warrior tasks and drills, survival, fieldcraft, hunter-killer teams, medical care, sustainment, homesteading, community. It's like, this is all encompassing. This is why we're teaching these skills. I know we kind of like didn't really like harken back to why, but hey, now we are. But I think some of the big ones we really need to hit on and like really emphasize are the warrior tasks, the battle drills, and the four pillars of survival, because these will, I'm not even kidding you, these will save your lives.
I'd say fieldcraft as well.
Fieldcraft for sure. Medical care is pretty well up there too.
It all ties in, right? I can't pick a favorite. I can't pick something that's more important than the others, because you're, like I said, you're going to have to wear a lot of hats. And yeah, the whole, you know, I keep saying the whole point of the podcast, we wear a lot of hats here too, guys. But if you've been with us long enough, you know that we try to really focus on thinking of things holistically and tying everything together, because you should be able to do all of this stuff, right? And nothing is wasted. There's reason for all of it, but you have to think guerrilla warfare. This is something where, you know, you may be called upon, you may have something that you have to do, and you have to pick up and go. But then you're not going to be sticking around.
No.
You go, you do the thing, and then you're gone. And you're going to need to, like you said, know your warrior tasking drills, shoot, move, communicate. You have to know your battle drills, your react to contact, your squad attack, break contact, react to ambush, et cetera, right? By heart, no one's going to be holding your hand in this. Not to mention your fieldcraft, living and operating in the field. Okay, so your concealment, your actual, you know, movement techniques, all this stuff, being able to live out of a ruck. Okay, if you get banged up, someone else gets banged up, medical care, you know, working out your own supply lines, dealing with what you have, all of it. For the end goal, right? This is a means to an end. But I want you to be self-sufficient and autonomous. I want you to be able to do all this stuff anyways. Like right. We said during our Caches episode, which you guys will get after this, for a rainy day.
Sometimes that rain is metal. Just saying. Heavy.
With all that being said, guys, you know what a guerrilla is. We have endless examples of that in history, in Vietnam, in Ireland, in Russia, in in Chechnya?
Chechnya. I think you mentioned World War II. I mean, even the Native Americans.
I was going to say, hell, in the South, or the Native Americans, right? We can give you as many examples as you want. You know what a guerrilla is. But what we've been trying to do here, what we're trying to teach, is you. You are the guerrilla, or at least you should be, right? Think of the Minutemen. Think of the men, everyday guys, brothers, fathers, dads, who were ready and willing and able to take up the call, who had decent training in warrior tasks, in drills, in medical care, and all these things. We are trying to exemplify that, trying to make that the best it can be. Because when it's all said and done, history will call you rebels. History will call you guerrillas. But you're men with responsibilities to take care of yourself and your family and your communities. And our job is to equip that. And I want you to think of what we're teaching in that lens, in that we are equipping you for a rainy day, because it will not always be good times. In fact, everyone sees the decline now, right? But in order to uphold what I believe to be your responsibility, you need to know how to do all of this stuff. And this isn't some far off thing. It's something that's at your doorstep. And thinking of these skill sets, think hard critically at yourself with those eyes and that lens. I want you to think of that as we move forward. As we move forward, as we talk about our different medical crash courses, as we go into more homesteading, as we go into more moral obligations, into the finer craft of shooting, into different movement techniques, into communication, setting up your SOPs, getting into different kit and equipment, different skill sets like lockpicking or entry, as we take a look back at history, or into the different jobs that you may have to fulfill. Think of all this as something that is not just an abstract idea, as something that you will have to pick up. Use this. Use this time. Use this information.
If you want a reading list, let us know. We're going to be compiling pretty good reading list on guerrilla warfare. So hit us up. It's not going to be comprehensive just yet, but we'll give you a few books to read.
And part of the story that we talked about, the Ghosts in the Darkness, the Man Eaters of Tsavo, we talked about how scary it must have been, but imagine that you're a day laborer after a long, hard day. You're sweaty, you're hot, you just got some water, you're laying down in your tent, and something rouses you from your sleep, and you don't see anything, but you feel something in your tent, an extra presence. Not right by you, but across the way. And then you hear the scream and the dragging and the clawing. And some guy you just met gets ripped out of your tent, jumped over a Burma and into nothingness. There and gone, almost without a trace. That's the kind of fear that you need to be able to bring to bear. Because few must stand against many. And the Man Eaters of Tsavo didn't do it for the right reasons. But you sure know that they had the right effect. Till next time, guys, we're the Hard Time Strongman Podcast, cheering up a bear class of man. Stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight.